Welcome to a special episode of Trial Lawyer View. Joining me today is James Grant, co-founding partner of Georgia Trial Attorneys. James has transformed personal injury law by introducing a niche market approach offering exceptional outsourced litigation services for fellow personal injury law firms. His mission is clear. His firm litigates so others don't have to. Through cutting-edge technology and expert legal services, as well as a strong support network, Georgia Trial Attorneys is redefining the landscape of legal practice. In today's special episode, we're going to talk about the business of personal injury lawyering, given Mr. Grant's unique insights and expertise. James, welcome to Trial Lawyer View. Appreciate you taking the time to be here with me today.
No, thanks for having me, Jason. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have a good time today.
So I wanted to talk about your view on lawyering and the business of running a personal injury law firm. I saw in my research that you said lawyering is easy, but business is hard, which I agree with. What, in your opinion, is it important to focus on in terms of business skills needed to run a personal injury law firm like a business instead of a practice?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mindset that goes against everything that we're taught in law school. It goes against everything that the bars across the country focus on, is everyone focuses on the actual practice of doing the legal work. But if you don't have the business principles first to make sure that things are systematized and they are controlled based on objective metrics, then you're just flowing in this land of subjectivity and nothing ever really gets done. There's no progress. So that's why you really have to take a business approach of having metrics first with a plan and actually measuring them so that you can actually determine, are you succeeding or not?
I'm interested, you know, because I've not heard specifics on law firm KPIs. Like, we have KPIs in the way we run our business, and each department has their own KPIs in terms of what we're measuring in terms of, you know, our client engagement team, our lien resolution team, our Medicare compliance team, every aspect of what we do. How do you suggest or recommend that it be done, or how do you do it as an example to give listeners an idea of what that really means?
Oh, yeah. I mean, hiring is such an important process, and hiring starts so much prior to them actually starting. The hiring process starts before you even post an ad, and it really starts with breaking down the job description. First, do you have an actual job description for this position? And then, before you post a job ad, come up with 3 or 4 KPIs, key performance indicators, on which this position will be judged and graded every single week. Once you have that, then you can go and develop your scorecard for how you're going to rate the candidates as they go through the interview process. And as you're doing that, then you're building your 90-day plan of what onboarding looks like for that person and what the test and evaluation that they will complete after 90 days to ensure that they have successfully mastered the onboarding process and can complete all of the tools, or not the tools, but have the tools to complete all of the tasks within their job description sufficiently and within a certain standard deviation as far as whatever your firm sets. So that's really where it starts. And so many don't follow that process. So many just want to hop on, well, I'll take the first warm body that walks through the door. And that's the last thing you should do with hiring. And then it's figuring out what each position needs. What do you really want this position to do? So many times, especially in the personal injury field, we use terms like case manager and paralegal as catch-alls. You know, they're doing everything. Well, you can't really do everything well. If you split things up and you have, you know, you have your settlements department, or you have your records department, or you have your legal drafting department. You know, when you compartmentalize things, then you can really get to the point where you have key performance indicators. You know, some of the ones for our firm, you know, we have, let's see, let's pick one. So for our onboarding department, whenever we receive a case from another law firm, we have an onboarding department that takes every single case, scrapes it down, rebuilds it in our system, in our format. They have to do that within 48 hours of us accepting the case. They also have to do that with a 95% accuracy, and we have a scoring system that we do, but those are the two main components for that position that are judged on a weekly basis. But it's really about figuring out what the position is, what they need to focus on, what are the three things that you really only care about every week, and then grade that, and everything else is noise.
So do you have an overall scorecard for your firm in the way you measure success week in and week out? Because we do, and I'm just curious, because that's, you know, what you've talked about is sort of more granular, but, you know, just the overall measures of, are you achieving what the business set out to, you know, at the start of the year? I mean, I know we do what we call a VTO, which is part of the EOS system, where we're setting our goals and then doing work throughout the year to achieve those goals. But then part of it is also, you know, financial performance and metrics around all those things. I'm just curious, is that part of what you're talking about as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, a similar process that we follow is we just break everything down to 90-day quarters. What is the objective, the one, two, three at most, but what are the, you know, one or two things that we're focusing on this quarter that really everything is driving towards? And again, this takes planning. You have to have a plan. You have to know what the objective is, how we're going to get there. You have to tell your staff and your team what the objective is and how they fit into it, how they're going to benefit from this, how the clients are going to benefit it. So you're really getting a global buy-in from everyone in your company, not just the ones that are doing the work, but even your clients as well. So that way you can reach whatever metric it is. And a lot of times, you know, the metric really breaks down to either revenue or a profit margin. That's really kind of the main drivers of success. You have to have revenue. Revenue is of the utmost importance. But even when you're tracking revenue, you need to make sure that your profit margin is also something that you're watching, because you could have a, you know, $10 million a year firm, but if you look at the numbers and you've got $11 million in expenses, you've got a problem. So those are probably the two biggest things that really we always track quarter to quarter to make sure that we're going towards our goals. And then figuring out with the departments, you know, how are we going to refine this process? You know, which automation are we going to really strive to implement this quarter? What's the focus that we're going to put in now? And what are we planning for the next quarters? That's really, with our firm, probably the biggest things is revenue, profit margin, and then automation implementation.
You mentioned something which I think is pretty key, and that's part of what we do. When I mentioned this VTO is a document we share through throughout our organization that says, here's what our objectives are for the entire year, and then here are the quarterly things that we're going to do to move towards that ultimate objective, but also set revenue targets and also bottom line percentage that we're trying to get to. So all those things are incredibly important as a business owner to actually run your business in a healthy manner and measure your performance. So love those things. So I wanted to ask you too, because I saw some things when I was doing my research for the podcast about your thoughts around the right law firm growth formula. And I wanted to talk to you about what you believe the essential elements of achieving significant growth are for a law firm.
When it comes to growth, it's something that you can't plan for in one sense, but you also have to plan for in another. When you double or triple your law firm's growth, everything is going to break. Literally, nothing is going to be the same. And it's hard to really understand what that's going to look like until you're in it. But if you want to grow and you want to mash the gas and you want to accelerate like so many businesses do, you know, we're a part of Scaling Up, which is Vern Harnish. He's the creator of the Scaling Up formula. We're in the Scaling Up program right now. And you have to take on, you know, something called creative destruction. Break everything down. Literally destroy it. and rebuild it and understand you're going to have to do that several times along the way. Still put in your plan of, you know, what are your big metrics? What are your revenue marks? What are your profit margin marks? What are the key elements that you're going to focus on quarter to quarter? But then understand that the way that you are running it at, you know, $500,000 is sure not the way you're going to run it at $3 million. And having coaches, having advisors to be able to call on and say, well, this is what worked then. This is what I think is going to work over here. What do you think? And then again, using the collective brain power of all your advisors and experience, you can hopefully try to hit the mark. And then when you don't, adjust and adapt and revisit it and figure out a way to get there still.
Such great advice, because I know from our experience corporately going from, you know, starting out with five people to getting to 20, to getting to 40, getting to 80, now over 100, like the changes in our organization and having to break things, like you said, and reimagine, it's constantly iterating. And that is, if you don't respond the right way to that, you're going to have problems. And that is such a critical thing in terms of managing growth, is really just a difficult task. And it's incredibly important if you don't want the customer experience to suffer, which in turn hurts your growth if the people that you're serving ultimately walk away with a bad taste in their mouth.
Well, I mean, it's a huge ego thing as well. You have to get over the mindset of, well, this was my baby and I built this thing and it works really, really well and I like it. But now as you grow, it doesn't. It's actually terrible. It couldn't be further from the worst thing for your firm. And sometimes, you know, just on an individual basis, you don't want to let that thing go because, again, it was yours. You made it and it worked. But now it doesn't. So there's a lot of mindset growth that comes in when you start scaling a business and scaling yourself, because you can't have those two moving at different rates. If you're scaling your business, your personal growth also has to be scaling at the same or similar rate as well.
Another great insight is, you know, that as a founder, whether it's a law firm or business, being a seat authority to people who can do it better than you can as you grow is a challenge, but having someone to help mentor and walk you through that is so darn important to ultimately get you to the right mindset, as you said, because that's what it is. It's simply mindset. I wanted to ask you, in terms of you've built this thriving business of a law practice, what mistakes have you made along the way that you think other lawyers can learn from?
So on at least one of them, right off the top of my head, I sound like a broken record when I say this, but cheap is expensive. And that transcends so many different levels. But the biggest one is hiring. So many times we think of, well, you know, if I can just save a few dollars an hour, you know, I don't have $50,000 to pay this paralegal. You know, if I just pay them 40 or 45, I probably can get by. It's going to cost you in the long run. And when you look at hiring, we always get hung up on the end of the year number. You know, if their salary is $100,000 a year, by the time you've paid for their health insurance, the 401k, all the other stuff, you're really at probably $125,000. That's a whole lot of money. And some people think, especially new business owners, that, well, I need to have $125,000 in the bank or else I can't hire this person. No, you really only need like 4 weeks of their salary saved up, because that's about how long max it should take to train a professional. You don't bring in amateurs. You don't hire cheap. You bring in people that are smarter than you in their given craft, and you give them the metrics. You give them the key performance indicators. You give them a, you know, 4 week ramp up within a whole 90-day plan of onboarding. But at that fifth week, they should be producing at a 3, 4, 5x of their salary. So that way they're actually making you money, because the goal of employees is to help the business be more efficient, bring in more money, bring in more profit, as opposed to just help you to do a little bit extra or do the same or even less. That's not the way employees and staffing works.
I love hearing you talk about this because it is near and dear to my heart. Well, the idea of hiring the right people and, you know, paying them correctly is so key because, you know, when you think about the responsibilities the people on your team have in terms of executing whatever it is that's important to the organization, it's, you know, that's who you're depending on. And, you know, one of the things I do, and I actually just did it today with a new team member that we onboarded, is I personally walk them through the, you know, the company, the corporate structure, and then I talk most of the time about our mission and what's important, what we value, how we want to treat our clients, how we want to serve our clients, and the importance of what we do and all of those things, because I know that I'm relying upon those people to deliver upon, you know, what we commit to do for our clients. So that, and particularly in this area where, you know, people that we serve have been through, you know, something that is, you know, very difficult, if not the most difficult thing that they've possibly ever faced personally. And I know this from being involved in a pretty significant personal injury case myself. I was struck by a car while cycling. And so I've been through every aspect of this. So the, you know, the responsibility we all have of being part of this system and who we serve, making sure our team understands that and delivers on that, to me is so key.
Yeah. I mean, like the client experience is oftentimes something that's neglected. I mean, you speak of having gone through it yourself. Having an insider's perspective is something that not all attorneys have. And even the simple things of just calling your phone number and pretending to be somebody else, you know, masking your phone number so no one knows who it is, and just, you know, secret shop your own firm and understand where the holes in your bucket are and how you can fix them. Because so many times, you know, you mentioned mistakes, we've just sat back and we've assumed that people are doing it the right way, that the way that we trained them 3 years ago is still the same way that they're doing it. And that's probably one of the next biggest issues, is making assumptions and not retraining your staff, re-implementing, going over the process. Or if it's a new process, hey, this is the new process. Please don't do the old process ever again, because that doesn't work for where we are today. I know you're comfortable with it. I know you've mastered it, but now this new thing is going to actually be better. Here's how it's going to make your life better and easier. And again, getting the buy-in, but making sure that those changes are actually implemented, as opposed to just assuming that they happen, that they always will happen.
I don't know if you've read the book Never Lose a Customer Again. Joey Coleman, the author, he calls himself a recovering lawyer. He was on the podcast before. And, you know, my hope is that a lot of lawyers will read his book and listen to that podcast, because he really talked about that customer experience and all the things that oftentimes are just neglected when you don't run a law firm like a business, because that customer, especially law firms that are highly dependent on, you know, referrals from past clients, which most firms, that's really what you want. You don't want to spend millions of dollars advertising unless you're Morgan & Morgan or some of these firms that have those incredible resources to do it. But, you know, this, what a customer experiences, particularly because of the nature of the customers, I think is, from what I've seen, is sometimes overlooked at probably the cost of, you know, that customer experience for clients that the personal injury firm is working with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. Like, when you were going through it, when you were hit by that as a cyclist, like, that was a big deal. That was probably the biggest thing in your life that you were dealing with within a, you know, decade or so. the biggest issue that most of our clients are dealing with from a traumatic standpoint. This isn't like happy-go-lucky fun times. This is an awful set of circumstances that they had no choice, that was thrust upon them. And when we don't sit back and say, well, what would I do? How would I respond to this? Would I like to be treated like this? Would I not like to be communicated with for 3 months at a time and have to call and hound, you know, for updates on my case? Those are the biggest complaints. Communication. You streamline your business, you put in processes and quality controls, and just fix communication, and all of a sudden your firm changes in drastic shape.
Yeah, one little key tidbit that Joey talked about when I had him on the podcast was just the little step of saying, here's what's going on right now with your case, here's the next thing that's going to happen, and here's when, you know, the next touch point will be, just so people are, you know, they know in advance, and you're being proactive in the communication to the client, so they know, you know, hey, this is what I should be expecting. And to me, just that little bit.
Yeah, we use something similar. You know, who is going to do what by when? Again, establishing those, you know, three things, so that way, you know, the client knows there's accountability, there's a deadline, it has to get done now.
So the last area I wanted to cover with you, and it's somewhat self-serving in that I do think that there are many opportunities for law firms to become more efficient. One of the ways is making sure that they focus on what they do best, which is, you know, make sure that they're getting the best possible results for their clients through the litigation, throughout the litigation, and or pushing cases towards settlement. You know, so one of the things that we talk to law firms about is how much time, lawyer time and paralegal time, for example, they spend on lien resolution activities, which is, you know, one of the major things that we do. But, you know, I know that you are an advocate for efficiency of law firms through automation technology. And I'm wondering, you know, what your thoughts are on how a law firm can transform their practices and achieve, you know, a different level of efficiency and profitability by leveraging all these opportunities to become a lean business machine.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're speaking my language in all kinds of ways, because when you look at it, so many attorneys, especially attorneys, we think that we're the best at everything and we try to do everything. That's not why we went to law school. That's not why we got licensed. At the end of the day, an attorney needs a law license to do like three things. They need a law license to give legal advice. They need a law license to attend depositions, go to mediations, go to court, things like that. And they need a law license to sign documents. Well, with e-file, signing documents really isn't a thing anymore. You're not actually physically signing the document. So you really only need a law license now for two things. And if you're doing anything else outside of those two things, it's not attorney legal work. So then that can go down to the next lowest paid, highest competent employee, which is generally a paralegal. Same principle applies with a paralegal. What does a paralegal need their certification or their level of experience for? And then everything else gets shifted down. And really, if you block out your time and track your time for a week, you'll realize that a vast majority of your time is spent on administrative matters. And administrative matters are something that high paid employees in any business should not be doing. That's something that you, number one, use automation, use offshore talent, use vendors, use any number of things to assist you so that you can focus on the highest, best, most efficient use of your time, which then gets you to that scale, as opposed to being bogged down, sitting on hold with a hospital for 45 minutes, waiting to find out that, oh, it's actually with a collection agency and you've got to go and call this number and spend another 20 minutes figuring out who to send what information to. That's not something any of the high paid employees in a business needs to be handling.
Yeah. I mean, when we run the calculations for a law firm and show them what it costs them, you know, based on input they give us on how many cases they're handling and how many liens they process through the firm. I mean, those numbers can be, you know, for a decent sized firm, and I'm talking, you know, 4 or 5 lawyer firm, like $500,000 of attorney and paralegal time that's being spent on something that can be outsourced and then charged as a client cost in the model. And, you know, that is a game changer to put $500,000, you know, in your marketing budget or in, you know, your pocket or wherever those dollars could be deployed. You know, I mean, that's just one area, right? I mean, all the technology that we have today and that's coming down the pike with AI to help enhance what we're doing is, to me, such an opportunity for law firms and this entire space to really take that next step and truly embrace how all of this can help a law firm become much more efficient, profitable, and better serve the injury victim at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I have the exact same conversation with other law firm owners and ask them, you know, what could you do with an extra $300,000? Zero overhead, zero marketing, zero anything, and you just get to dump that money into your marketing machine. How much more money are you going to make from a, you know, cost of acquisition and then comparing that with your average case value? Are you going to make more money there or doing these other things that you either don't want to, aren't good at, or is not a driving factor of profit and revenue in your firm?
Yeah, beautiful. Last question, and it's a little open-ended, so I'll let you kind of say whatever you feel like is appropriate here. As a lawyer who's kind of focused on these types of issues, what is your view? And I want to give you the opportunity to talk about anything that maybe you haven't talked about yet, or just talk further on a point that we've talked about in closing the episode.
I mean, there's so many things that, you know, we can talk about, but especially where we are today, and you've mentioned it a few times, is don't be afraid of new things. Don't be afraid of technology. With the stuff that's happening with AI and automation, as lawyers, we have to get on board with it now, because especially the new and up and coming lawyers, they're learning it, they're training on it, and they're going to lap us. I mean, they're going to overtake us in ways that we couldn't even comprehend if we don't start. So just because it's new, just because it's different, AI is a tool that can significantly revolutionize the modern practice of law. And I think every lawyer really needs to take a deep, long look at what those tools are, learn them, you know, ask me questions. I'm not by no means an expert, but we use AI and automation every single day, and it just enhances everything, makes everyone's life easier, and allows you to grow faster. So don't be afraid of these new things. Challenge yourself, challenge your team, and don't be afraid to make mistakes along the way of pursuing other technologies and other ways to better the practice. Don't just, you know, assume that this is the way that we've done it for 50 years, so this is the way it's going to work for the next 50 years. At least right now on the level, on the glide path that we're on, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. In my experience using AI, and I've used it in a lot of different ways already, and that's just, you know, the current architecture, which there's so many developers out there specializing in different ways to deploy this. It is really a game changer to start leveraging that and figuring out the best ways to deploy it, even if it's just personally to start out to understand the power of it and how it all works, because it's quite simple, you know, once you learn the prompts and how to manipulate what you're getting out of it. But the power of it, I'm in the middle of editing a second edition of my first book that I wrote, and using that to augment what I had already written in terms of key takeaways and summaries and just overall editing process. It's so powerful that you don't need an editor like you used to need when you wrote a book. I can pretty much do this all using AI, which is pretty amazing to think about the power of that kind of processing capability. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be able to, you know, take information about a client's case and take a client's pain and suffering narrative in their own words and portions of their medical records, stripping out their, you know, PHI or their identifiable information and uploading that to an AI and telling it, for instance, you know, channel the persona of Harvey Specter and write this as a pain and suffering narrative, selling it to the insurance adjuster to get as much money as you possibly can from this new demand. All of a sudden now you've channeled an entire system to think about your client's pain and what they went through in an entirely different way and a really good sales pitch as well. And it's just little things like that, that all of a sudden, like, I have access to this. I can use this in every part of my practice. Why wouldn't I want to do that?
Yeah, and even, you know, data analysis. I mean, I've used it to take business data that, you know, is not identifiable, but just take it to process that. And the power of the insights that come out of that is like, it blows your mind. That sort of capability is and it's infancy, so it's going to get, you know, a lot more powerful the more data that gets fed into all this machinery. I mean, the main concern is privacy of data and all of that. So that's the thing. But there are solutions out there to make sure your data stays private anyway. So really, you just have to understand it and really start to leverage it the way you're talking about, which I think is an incredible opportunity for law firms to start to experiment with this to understand what it really can bring to the practice and to ultimately help the injury victim.
Yep. I mean, like I said, there's only opportunities. There are no obstacles. You have to find the silver lining, find that opportunity and go after it.
Well, I appreciate you joining me today. Thank you, James. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach you?
So the best way to get in touch with us is through our website. Our website is the number one resource that we have for other lawyers that are in the personal injury field. We give away a lot of our templates, a lot of our resources. You have the ability to schedule a free strategy session with me or somebody from our team. You also have the ability to schedule a free lunch. I'll take you out to lunch, especially if you're in the Atlanta area. And that website, it's 833-4-THE-WIN.com. That's our toll-free number. So 833-4-THE-WIN.com.
Perfect. And I'll make sure that we include it in our show notes for today's episode. And we'll see everyone on the next episode of Trial Law Review.
Thank you, sir.